Session number 12243, Captain De Courcy Ireland, Reel 9.
No, she was bigger. She had 4.7-inch guns. She was a brand new ship. Peculiar in some ways because Peplow was a lieutenant, senior lieutenant, but he'd done very well at Jutland when his captain was killed and he'd had to take over. Well, he was the captain of the ship as a lieutenant, but the engineer was a commander, which is very, very peculiar, really, to have a three-stripe engineer in charge of the engines as captain and lieutenant. But they got on very well. We had no trouble at all.
Now, one thing I meant to ask, this was the last of the ships you were on during the war. What would you say was a happy ship and what wasn't? How did the Westcote compare with the others? Were they all happy ships?
Yes, they were all happy ships. There was a very strong esprit de corps among destroyers, the destroyer people. Partly because being a small community, you all knew each other, officers and men, and you all had to get on. At least if you didn't, then there was trouble. Which later on I had another choice. But no, we went, we also in the Westcote, we did much more flotilla work.
What do you mean?
That's say, with the other ships in the flotilla. I can't remember actually what sort of work we were doing, but I became the gunnery lieutenant. As a sub-lieutenant, I was in charge of the guns. First lieutenant did the torpedoes and cable officer and that sort of thing. I was also a correspondence officer and sort of captain secretary, that type of thing.
What did being the gunnery officer involve then?
Well, I was in charge of if we went into action, I was in charge of all the guns.
And where would your station be?
On the bridge.
So you'd be on the bridge?
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
And what did you think of the 4.7?
We had a bit of trouble with them, technical trouble, which we overcame, but they were very powerful guns.
What was the problem with them?
Well, the problem was that when you fired, the mounting would, the laying part of the mounting, over the mounting, would go like that, and there was a danger that the gun layer would break his wrist or strain his wrist. It was some technical.
How did you solve that?
I've forgotten that we did solve it. At any rate, we went straight along, more or less, in what I would call much more regular routine, not much convoy work. I've got to get this order right. See, I was in at the. I joined the Westcote in 1918. We had till November. I was at the surrender of the German fleet.
There were two incidents I could pick up before.
Yeah.
There's one, something happened off May Island.
Oh, yes, we had a hurricane off May Island. I was also a navigator. We were anchored off May Island. I forget what we were doing. And a real hurricane got up. We dragged 3 miles in 20 minutes. And the wind was so strong that we were trying to let go every anchor we had. And I remember Jock McCall and the cable party had to crawl along the forecastle, hanging on to everything to pull themselves along because you couldn't stand up. And we finally did. I've never seen anything like the wind. It was extraordinary.
Did it damage the ship much?
No, it didn't. Fortunately, we got her up before we hit anything.
And the other thing was you picked up an RNAS pilot.
We picked up, yes, we picked up a chap called Ackland. It was an RAF. Well, he was RNAS then. RNAS, Royal Air Service. He had been sent on a mission to bomb the Zeppelin sheds near Hamburg and flying a Camel. And they had no method of landing on again. He was catapulted off a ship. And then when they'd finished their mission, they had to come back, find a ship steaming along, which would pick them up, and they'd ditch just near the ship. And be picked up, they hoped. Well, we were sent into... Ackland had gone off to bomb the Zeppelin sheds, and we, by ourselves, were sent off right into the Heligoland Bight to try and pick him up. And he did. He came back, saw us, and ditched. They didn't fly very fast in those days, aircraft. He was quite all right, just ditched. And we hauled him on board. We also hauled his aircraft on board, or what was left of it, because it had very valuable petrol in it, which we wanted for our motorboat. So we filled him full of gin and dried him out and that sort of thing, and then landed him. Well, now, funnily enough, I met him again in the Baltic in 1919. When he was flying seaplanes up there, and we were helping the Estonians against the Reds. And some years later, he was commanding officer of an air station up near Invergordon, where I took a squadron. So that, it's funny, isn't it, how you keep on coming across a chap like that.
Now, what about when the armistice was announced? Were there any, where were you when the actual armistice happened, as opposed to the German fleet surrender?
I think we were in the pens of Port Edgar. And I remember going up to Edinburgh, where there were big seats.
With the what type of seats?
Well, the whole of Princes Street was simply just a mass of people. And anyone who was in uniform, mostly sailors, was rather overwhelmed by the young ladies who were all going round and round showing their arms round your neck and all that sort of thing. And it was just a general mass of enjoyment.
Were the crowd getting drunk? I mean, was there a drunken air to it?
No, not more, very excitable air, but I wouldn't say that it was, you know, a drunken orgy sort of thing. Everybody was rushing around and cheering anything and anybody and all that sort of thing. It was a very cheerful sort of mob, really.
And you just joined in the fun?
Oh, yes, we just joined in to see what it was like. We had rather difficulty getting away.
Did you do anything else that day?
No, no.
And then, did anything happen then before the actual arrival of the German fleet, the surrender?
No. Nothing special.
What do you remember about the surrender of the German fleet then? Because as far as you were concerned that day, that would be the 21st of November.
Yes. We wondered what it would be like, what would happen. We were all at, as you might say, a pretty high state of alert, because we didn't want any fun games to start or anything like that, or somebody get trigger happy, you see. I think we rather think the thing we were possibly, it was in our minds that some German Nazi type, as they were became later, you know, get trigger happy and say to hell with this and try and loose off something and start a schmozzle. But nothing like that happened at all. And it all went absolutely according to drill.
Was it an imposing scene? I mean,
Very imposing. You know, steaming towards each other, these two fleets. Of course, we were far away the bigger fleet. I think they only had about 70 something ships. And I suppose we must have had double that number at least. It's quite decent weather, rather hazy, misty, as far as I remember. We were sort of led by a cruiser, I think it was a Cardiff, I forget, one of them, at any rate, who sort of went on ahead to see all was. They were properly lined up in two lines, you see, like that, and then we just sort of went like that round
on
and got
my side.
Yeah.
Did you realise what it meant? I mean, as an occasion?
Yes, I think we were rather. I don't know how you put it. It was rather a moment for a thing of that size to happen. One never thought that, and never dreamt of how the war would end like that.
Now, what happened? Where did you take the German ships to?
Rosyth, to begin with, yes.
And were they inspected?
Yes.
What level of inspection? Did you take part in
that? No, we didn't. But I think the inspection teams were probably from the larger ships, battleships, cruisers, and that sort of thing. They were all inspected pretty closely. I think merely to see that they were seaworthy, we knew that. That I think it was more from the point of view of ammunition and what the state the armaments were in, that sort of thing.
Did you hear any reports of what the armaments and
No, it was pretty. They had gone by the rules pretty well, as far as we could see.
And then you became part of the guard.
Yes. Then we took them. We escorted them up to Scarpa, where they were. They had a lot of anchorages, not in the old fleet anchorage in the flow, but the destroyers were all at Gutter Sound, which is where we used to anchor or moor, and the cruisers, battleships and what have you were outside, just the other side of an island called Carver. I've got a map of the Orkneys there, which actually shows where the anchorage was. And so far as we were concerned, we acted as guard destroyer, and we were at a buoy in Gutter Sound where all their destroyers were. The destroyers were moored in pairs, we were on a slip rope to a buoy at 5 minutes' notice, just on a loop wire to the buoy, so we could go off like that, you see. There was a standby destroyer as well at the other end of the line.
So there were just the two destroyers?
Two destroyers, yes.
And you took it in turns, I presume?
Took it in turns, just from the flotilla. And we did several turns there.
And what did your duties consist of? Just
Well, our duties were no fraternising. We were never supposed to board them, but we had to at times, because to begin with, at any rate, there was a lot of demoralisation, and in some of them the sailors wouldn't obey the officers. In fact, we felt rather sorry for some of the officers, because they were treated like dirt. I've seen a German sailor go up to an officer, tear his iron cross, which he was wearing, off his jacket, and then offer it for sale to us. We used to patrol up in our motorboat up and down, see that they were abiding by the rules. They weren't allowed ashore, so anything like that.
They were just skeleton crews, were
they? They were mainly skeleton crews, yes. The destroyers, you see, would be in pairs, so they'd have a skeleton crew for the two ships. Enough to keep light and heat and so on going. I think the big ships, they had skeleton crews. I shouldn't think any of them had more than, say, to begin with, 200 men in each ship, in the battleships, battle cruisers. And they kept on reducing the men the whole time. The, as I say, there was demoralization and very poor discipline.
What other signs of demoralization did you see?
Oh, generally the treatment of the officers by the men.
Are there any other examples?
Not specific, but they just treated them. They wouldn't always obey what they were told to do.
And would you have to go and...
They had a sort of workers... I would call it a sort of... It appeared to us to be a sort of... trade union, really, workers' union that ran some of the ships, and they would be sailors, and they would run things.
And did you deal with them?
Yes, we saw quarrels or, you know, rough stuff going on, then we just boarded them and told them to quit.
And would they then stop?
Yes, they had to.
If a ship was being run by a workers' union or whatever it was, would you actually negotiate with them if you wanted something done, or would you insist that the officers...
Insist on the officers.
You wouldn't deal with members of the...
No.
So you'd restore the officers to...
Yeah, that's the idea.
And did you talk much to the officers?
Not very much. They wanted. Some of them wanted to talk to us a lot. But that we were told not to, you know.
Why not? Why you were told not to?
I've no idea. Our orders were extremely loose, really, we thought. All I can say is that the morale in the destroyers, the German destroyers, was higher than it was in the bigger ships. That we did notice. Though we didn't see a great deal of the battleships, because they were outside the sound, you see. So we did go around and have a look at them occasionally, and that's all.
Did the morale get worse, or did it improve?
No, it improved for the simple reason that the German admiral, he was very clever, he managed to ship thousands of them back. I forget how many there were when they first came over, but shall we say that I think about 20,000 nearly were shipped home at different times. They had a mail destroyer that came over once a fortnight and brought mail and a certain amount of food. And then on the return, they would get the worst malcontents on board her to be shipped back.
So, as the troublemakers left...
As the troublemakers left, organisation and everything got a bit morale, and so on got better.
Did you have it during this period, because it was quite a while before they sunk themselves,
yes.
Did you ever think that they might do anything like that? I mean, was it ever mooted, or were you ever given any contingency plans?
No, none at all.
And did you yourself or any of your friends ever speculate that something like that might be done?
No, I don't think we did. We knew that there was an awful sort of kerfuffle going on among the Allies as to what was going to happen to them. We knew that the French who were always rather difficult. The French wanted a lot of them turned over to their navy, and we reckoned that was absolutely crazy, because they all had different weapons, they had different ammunition, they had different everything, and they would never have. They were in a pretty poor state, some of the ships that they came over, and though they made a sort of, they varied from ship to ship. Some of them would even try painting them up a bit and keeping them, you know, pretty ship-shape. Others, they just let them go. And so that they deteriorated the whole time.
So you were aware of the external politics of it, but none of you had ever thought of scuttling as an option. It just hadn't occurred to you.
No, it hadn't occurred to us.
And it doesn't seem to have occurred to your admirals either. They didn't, or your officers, they senior officers, they didn't give any...
No.
Are there any incidents you recall before the scuttling?
Oh, there were always various things. The locals used to claim that some of them got ashore at night and rustled sheep and that sort of thing. But I think that was they thought that was a good idea. You know, the same compensation. Whether indeed we never saw any who got ashore. They had a certain number of boats. And they were allowed limited visits between ships. The senior officers asked that particularly so that they could, you know, all the excuses, keep morale up and see that the other ships were behaving and all that sort of thing. No, I wouldn't say that there was any untoward incidents that we saw.
And immediately before the 21st of June, did you know, was it like on the 20th or the 19th, did you notice anything at all unusual about it?
Nothing at all.
So it was completely out of the blue?
Completely out of the blue.
And so what exactly happened that day, 21st of June 1919?
Well,
as
far as we were concerned, we were just doing ordinary routine, and at about... around about noon, just after noon, the senior subaltern we kept a watch on the bridge, you see, and he came rushing down and said that it looked as if the Germans were abandoning ship and something awful was going on, and he thought some of them seemed to be getting a bit lower in the water. And we thought he was being funny at first. And then we rushed up on deck, and we could see that there were signals flying. The destroyers got the signal to scuttle later because they were out of sight of the main big ships, and so the signals took a bit of time to get through to them. So that we got underway immediately.
You were the duty destroyer that day.
We were the duty destroyer. We got underway immediately and steamed along. The destroyers, we couldn't notice anything definite going on because, as I say, they were a bit behind. As soon as we could get the other ships in view, we could see that they were abandoning ship. There was a signal, they had flag signals flying. They're abandoning ship, and some of them were beginning to either heel over slightly or get lower in the water. It was obvious they were sinking.
What other British ships were present at that time? You'd have the other destroyer.
We had the standby destroyer. The fleet was at sea.
Were there any other ships watching the battle?
There were in the fleet anchorage, as we called it, there were all sorts of little craft. Hoys and drifters and things like that. There were a couple of patrol drifters, I think, with probably some attendants in charge, but civilian crews. There were water boats. There would be supply boats. That sort of thing. Quite a number of small craft.
But you were the only actually proper ships.
We and the standby destroyer were the only ones in.
And the standby destroyer that day was?
Oh, I think it was a war peril. War peril, I think.
Right. So, would your captain be in charge of what was going on?
As far as he could, yes.
You know, he was a senior naval officer about at the time, would he be?
As far as we knew, yes. Yes.
So, you sailed towards the main fleet?
We sailed towards the main fleet to see what was going on. And as we got in among them, they were abandoning ship and some ships. We tried to stop them by firing machine gun rounds at the sides of the ship after warning them, not at any of the men, but at the side of the ship, like that, to stop them. They were not to abandon ship, they were to close the seacocks and so on. But all that happened there was that they just let go of the boat's falls and they all jumped over the side and then climbed to their boats. So that there was nothing you could do about it. Absolutely nothing.
What were the patrol boats and the other small craft doing?
One or two of them, we didn't see it actually, but one or two of them did open fire. And there were a few casualties, but I think that was due to they didn't know what to do, and they only had inexperienced crews. I mean, a water boat, a skipper, and then a sub-lieutenant or something, a drifter.
Was Petlow, your captain, was he panicking at all?
No, he wouldn't, no.
Calm as
Oh yes, he was very much.
So your first effort, that was your first effort.
Yeah.
You tried to stop them getting off the ship.
Yeah.
And shouted and
that's
ignored
it.
Or,
yeah.
Or they just jumped in the water.
Yeah.
So what next?
I remember passing one ship, they were fighting among themselves because they'd for some reason they either hadn't got enough boats or something like that. And they obviously hadn't got enough life jackets. there was a free-for-all going on. As soon as they got hold, one chap got hold of a rifle jacket, he was over the side, you see. So we gave that up. That was...
How long would all that have taken him from... You said it's about noon.
Oh, I suppose... Jolly hard to say. I think we gave up doing that after about half or three quarters of an hour.
So what did you do then?
Then we went back to Gutter Sound. We found that first thing we found was two destroyers had been a bit late on it, and we thought they looked as if they'd only just opened the cocks or whatever they were doing. We tried to slip the cables, but we couldn't the shackles, we didn't understand the shackle joints, and anyway they were all rusted up, so we blew the cables and small explosive that you carry in destroyers, just blew the cables and then pushed them inshore, pushed them into the
your boat
with our boats, yes, pushed them inshore with on island of Carver, I think it was, and no, it wasn't Carver, it was another island anyway, in Gutter Sound. We pushed them into the beach until they grounded, and they sank more or less upright in very shallow water there. Then after that...
Did that damage your ship at all, pushing them?
Well, not very much. No.
Superficially.
After that, we concentrated on the Hindenburg.